You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Everybody, welcome to TPC. Welcome to spring. I heard it was the first day of spring a couple of days ago, hence the intro music tonight. And what a fantastic day it's been in the Mid-South. Tomorrow is my daughter's birthday. Today was her birthday party, and we spent all day in the yard. She had a tea party. My wife just so wonderfully put this thing together. And they're having a slumber party at the house for her and some of her little friends. Just a wonderful day of friends and family. And then as I was coming to the radio station tonight, I thought to myself, I don't have to do this. I get to do this. Come in, spend time with you every weekend, ladies and gentlemen, in service of a cause greater than ourselves. Welcome to the show. Welcome to spring. I'm James Edwards. Keith Alexander with me for this first hour. A hero has emerged in the wake of the New Zealand carnage. And tonight, we're going to tell you a little bit more about Australian Senator Fraser Anning. That's coming up this hour. Later in the show, Brad Griffin of Occidental Descent will be making his first appearance on TPC this year. He is a regular guest, but his first time in 2019. He's going to help us understand what's going on there with Democratic presidential candidate Andrew Yang. And the apparent rising interest there. Is this trolling? Is this real? Brad's done about 40 posts on Chairman Yang, so we're gonna find out. But Keith, here's what's going on in Australia. So we all know, of course, we talked last week about the shooting in Christchurch. William Fraser Anning is an Australian politician who serves as a senator for Queensland, Australia. He's a member of the Conservative Nationalist Party. Let's take a look at his platform, and let's take in his own words. This is what Fraser Anning says that he stands for. Ending all third world immigration, an interest-free government bank, absolute freedom of speech, banning foreign ownership of our land, firearms for self-defense, traditional family values, exit the UN and end foreign aid. And then, if that wasn't enough, Keith, there was this. He backs it up with a bite instead of a bark. He says, my Conservative Nationalist Party is the only party that will aim to preserve Australia's predominantly European ethnic composition. In 1971, we were 99% European. Today, we are less than 70%. We must not allow this decline to continue. Keith, this is a man that cuts to the chase. This is a guy that we can win with. I mean, obviously, I say we, the royal we, maybe he's in Australia. This is what we would hope. We hope that Trump might be something that we hope. I mean, this guy makes Steve King look like a liberal. I mean, this guy actually says the name European. We must not allow the decline to continue.
Well, I think that, you know, except for the fact that he has not called out the usual suspects, and apparently that's as much of a third rail in Australia as it is in America.
Yeah, I do believe he is subservient to that particular third rail that you bring up, and rightly so.
Yeah, but it's, on the other hand, it would be, you know, rhetoric is great. We found that out with Trump, that people that talk the talk don't always walk the walk. But, you know, I don't know how much power he's likely to get. But we certainly need more politicians like him, not only in Australia, but in every other predominantly white nation in the world. And we need to shed ourselves of these people that think that we live in such an unassailable position of authority and power that we can continue to cede power and authority to third world strangers without losing the essence of our societies and our communities.
Fraser Anning, the senator in Australia, is, of course, currently under a vicious attack by the globalist media because of a letter. Now, by the way, he was denounced by the entire Australian government, by every single member of their parliament, sort of like what Steve King was a couple of months ago, except unlike King, he didn't also vote to denounce himself, as Steve King did. But he's currently under a vicious attack because of a letter he wrote after the mosque shooting in New Zealand. Obviously a few days ago, and this was from his department or his office as a senator. Here's what he wrote, Keith. Speaking following reports of multiple shootings at two mosques in New Zealand earlier today, Senator Fraser Anning has responded with strong condemnation. I am utterly opposed to any form of violence within our community, and I totally condemn the actions of the gunman. However, whilst this kind of violent vigilantism can never be justified, what it highlights is the growing fear within our community, both in Australia and New Zealand, of the increasing Muslim presence. As always, left-wing politicians and the media will rush to claim that the causes of today's shootings lie with guns or those who hold nationalist views, but this is all cliched nonsense. The real cause of the bloodshed on New Zealand streets today is the immigration program which allowed Muslim fanatics to migrate to New Zealand in the first place. Let us be clear. While Muslims may have been the victims today, they are usually the perpetrators. Worldwide, Muslims are killing people in the name of their faith on an industrial scale. The entire religion of Islam is simply the violent ideology of a 6th-century despot masquerading as a religious leader, which justifies endless war against anyone who opposes it and calls for the murder of unbelievers and apostates. The truth is that Islam is not like any other faith. It is the religious equivalent of fascism, and just because the followers of this savage belief were not the killers in this instance, that does not make them blameless. As we read in Matthew chapter 26, verse 22, all they that take the sword must perish by the sword. And those who follow a violent religion that caused them to murder us cannot be too surprised when someone takes them at their word and responds in kind, Senator Anning concluded. You wouldn't hear that out of anybody in American politics, I can tell you that. Not a standing senator.
Yeah, well, see, that's where the problem is, not only in America, but Australia, Great Britain, all of Europe, New Zealand, all of the Anglosphere, and all of the European derived peoples of the world. The fact that he has those ideas, which is great, but that he is a voice in the wilderness, you know, a lonely voice, is the essence of our problem. We need political power like a dead man needs a coffin, James, and we need to be, rather than just saying words that evoke patriotism and identity in our people, we need to have someone in a position of authority and power who has enough political capability and power to make his words become the policy of the nation. And I hope that Australia is moving in that direction.
Well, we'll be right back. We're going to spend a little more time on this guy, and then we're going to move on. Keith has a couple of other topics we want to cover this hour that are really good. One's a follow-up from another topic we talked about last week with Bill Johnson. Very interesting response from the, I believe it was the LA Times. Stay tuned.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads, a divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Talk Right, the conservative app offered by TalkStream Live that caters exclusively to the conservative talk radio community. Here you'll see only talk shows and podcasts from the conservative right, all the big broadcast names and online digital shows in one place. Talk Right makes it easy to find all your favorite conservative talkers with all the upscale features you come to expect from TalkStream Live. Keep up with the fast-paced political world. Download Talk Right today from Google Play or the App Store.
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Is a beautiful, beautiful song. What a great day. What a great time of year as the seasons change. So many things change in our lives, but thank God that for the last 15 years, there has been one constant for all of us out there, and that has been this radio program. And it's like I said, I don't have to do this. I get to do this. It's an honor to be with you every night, ladies and gentlemen, every week, every month, every year, every season. Boy, we've seen a lot of winters. I guess 15 of them anyway. But here's another spring and the dawn of a new day. And hopefully it will be a great couple of months for us together and for our calls in general. There's a website that I go to from time to time and have been going to it over the years, Chateau Hartiste. And as it was put over there at the Chateau, and I quote, Fraser Anning is campaign Trump, except even more based and red-pilled. I would suspend the constitutional ban on electing foreigners for U.S. president just to give Anning a shot. We suspended the ban to elect Obama, so maybe we can do it again. That's a good comment. But here's the point, Keith. It was encouraged by a Chateau Hartiste that we all stand in solidarity with Senator Anning and send a letter of support so that he knows all good men around the West have his back. And so this is one such sample letter that was posted at that website. Now, if you go to thepoliticalcesspool.org, if you want the mailing address in Australia for this senator, and I'm going to send him a copy of my book along with a very nice letter myself, letting him know that he has an AM talk radio show here in the United States that is fully behind him. You can get his address there at thepoliticalcesspool.org. But this was what this one person's letter read. Dear Senator Anning, I want to take a moment to thank you for your letter regarding the New Zealand mosque shooting. Your letter is truthful. Now, we just read that letter in the previous segment. Your letter is truthful, and for that reason, it will be condemned. I admire your courage in publishing it. A public figure speaking common sense is a rarity. I think the people responsible for the influx of these immigrants count on citizens being too polite or too intimidated to complain about the demographic shift. We've been taught to be welcoming and to not create a fuss. Altruism is a European trait that will probably be the death of us. I'm an American and I live in the state of Idaho. Idaho is actively being flooded by Muslim refugees. Idaho was over 98% white in 1970. Now it's less than 89% white. The refugee community is overrepresented in crimes. These refugees have nothing in common with Idaho's residents, nor do they share our culture, heritage, history, holidays, or beliefs. The residents of Idaho didn't ask for or vote for the importation of these refugees. It was foisted upon us. We have a colloquial term, badass, a general term used to describe the behavior that is fearless, authentic, compassionate, and ethical. You, sir, are one. I would be honored to be your constituent. Since the mosque shooting, I saw you get egged at a press event. Shame on the kid that egged you, and shame on his parents for raising him so poorly. Also, shame on your premier for investigating the incident. You did nothing wrong. Thank you for your time. Stay strong and never apologize. It was mentioned, Keith, in that letter that this senator was egged. That is to say that a 17-year-old young man had an egg in his hand and went behind the senator during a press conference and crushed it on his skull. One final nugget from Chateau Hartiste. In response, his reaction to that, Senator Anning, he barely flinched. He then stepped gracefully forward to deliver a pretty good punch to the kisser. It's the opposite physical reaction you see from a soy boy who had gotten assaulted. So, Keith, your reaction to all that?
Well, it's all well and good, but, you know, quite frankly, I wish we really had something more than good wishes to offer this man. You know, we're not going to be able to save him from the pillorying that he obviously has in store for him by the powers that be, the deep state of Australia. I'm sure they have a deep state there just like we have one here. We're seeing this on a daily basis here in America. The deep state, and Trump continues to draw his personnel for running his government from the same usual suspects, the same deep state. And he's basically staffing his government with fifth columnists. We need to find more men like this man. We need to find somebody that, and we also need to find a way to protect them from being made to walk the plank. Like, you know, Steve King has had all of his, assignments to powerful governmental committees in the House of Representatives stripped away from him. This is what typically happens when somebody gets out of line and says the truth, like the child in the emperor's new clothes in our government. We just we find just exactly how feckless we are and how little power we have in our own government. And I'm heartened to hear this man speaking, but, you know, it's going to be another one of these situations when all is said and done, more will be said than done, unless we can somehow convert this into the currency of political power. We've got to have some political power, and until we do, we're just whistling Dixie, James, both in Australia and in America.
And in Dixie, for that matter.
Yeah, right.
Well, Keith, you know, I say, to accentuate your point, I guess it is a shame we have to go all the way to Australia, literally the other side of the world, to find one senator who has a pair. And there he is, Senator Fraser Anning. And by the way,
he's a smart man, too. He's obviously smarter than Donald Trump because he has a more concise and precise understanding of what we're up against than I've ever heard Trump say, for example.
Well, he will mention that he is fighting for the European majority in no uncertain terms. Trump, you know, that would never pass his lips. If you go to this man's Twitter, you know, obviously I was introduced to him just a few days ago since our last show as a result of what happened in Christchurch, New Zealand, and I hadn't heard of Fraser Anning before. But I did some deep digging this week in preparation for tonight's broadcast, and, you know, I don't know the man intimately, but everything I've seen him – you go to his Twitter feed, for instance – he's talking our language. Okay, so this is a good thing. But in case you were wondering, folks, you know, there was a whole lot of attention, and still to this day is, being lavished on that very, very, very rare occurrence where a white man with apparently at least some right-wing leanings going in and committing mass carnage. I mean, you can count them on your hands. It's the guy up in Pittsburgh Dylan Roof and this guy. That's it for the last, what, 5 years. Anyway, we posted to thepoliticalcesspool.org a Zoomable list of worldwide terrorist attacks for the month of March. Now, this was to date as of midweek this week. Now, how are we defining terrorist? A person or people who use unlawful violence and against civilians in the pursuit of political aims is how we're defining it. So, but based upon that definition, during the month of March, Keith, there have been 66, and we have them graphed there for you, Islamic terror attacks, 8 communist terror attacks, 1 right-wing terror attacks. So it seems like one out of those, let's see. Yeah, it's debatable that, it, you know, again, this guy, he called himself an eco-fascist, whatever that is. But let's see, 66 plus 8 is, elementary math on the fly here, live on the radio. 66 plus 8 is 74. 75 total, if you count the one in New Zealand, 75 total terror attacks this month. 66 were Islamic. Which one did you hear about? Yeah, you know the answer, Keith.
Yeah, exactly.
So how about that?
One that you're going to hear about. Well, see, that shows that the medium is the message, as Marshall McLuhan said. If you control the media, you control reality. You control people's perceptions of what is real and what is not. Apparently, the 66 Islamic terror attacks they don't count. They're imaginary. They're no confidence. At least that's what our masters of media would have us believe.
Well, as Sam Bushman so accurately puts it, one of his catchphrases, he who owns the media makes the rules. We'll come back. We're going to shift gears when we come back. Stay tuned.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump's supporters were gathering outside the Trump Tower this afternoon in New York City to show their support for the president as the Mueller investigation comes to a close. Many of the supporters were wearing Make America Great Again hats and waving American flags.
We have people here from everywhere. We want to show them that there's support up here in these liberal states because we tend to be forgotten about.
The Justice Department has said that Congress could receive that special counsel report as early as Sunday. New England Patriots owner Robert Kraft is apologizing after being charged in a Florida massage parlor prostitution and trafficking investigation. Kraft said in a statement that he's truly sorry and he knows he has disappointed and hurt his family, friends, coworkers, and fans, and many others who rightfully hold him to a higher standard. Kraft said in the statement that he hopes to not be judged by his words but by his actions, and through those actions he hopes to regain people's confidence and respect. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hey guys, Charlie Jones here. You've heard me talk about MyPillow's amazing pillows. All you have to do is sleep on one of them, and you'll know why they call the creator of MyPillow, Mike Lindell, a sleep genius. Everything he creates revolves around making sure that you get the best sleep of your life. That's why he created the new Giza Dreams bedsheets. He began by using the world's best cotton, called Giza. It's only grown in a region between the Sahara Desert, the Mediterranean Sea, and the Nile River. Ultra soft, breathable, extremely durable, the Giza Dreams sheet set includes 2 full 21-inch wide pillowcases that'll fit over any pillow, and deep pocket sheets that'll fit over any mattress. And the first night you sleep on these sheets, you will never want to sleep on anything else. Put them on your bed, and when you crawl in after a long day, it feels like you're sleeping at a 5-star hotel. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the Giza Dreams Sheet Special, use the promo code USA. You'll get 30% off and free shipping. That's right, promo code USA for 30% off and free shipping. That's promo code USA at MyPillow.com.
President Trump says he'll nominate Stephen Moore to fill the vacancy on the board of the Fed Reserve. Moore is an economic policy analyst and fiscal conservative who's been also critical of Fed Chair Jerome Powell. Moore joins Fox News and talks about what he's going to try to implement on the board.
I will try to pursue and promote policies that increase wages and increase growth and prosperity. That's my whole agenda here, is what makes American businesses and American workers, you know, better off.
Flood damage in Nebraska is expected to exceed $1.3 billion. Nebraska Governor Republican Pete Ricketts says despite that all, his state is doing their best to remain optimistic.
This is going to be a, you know, long road recovery, but, you know, we're Nebraska strong here. We're going to get through together. Yeah, the water is crashing and starting to go down, but we're still having a lot of flooding all along the major river systems across our state.
March Madness continues with a full slate of games over the weekend. The Sweet 16 will be decided by late Sunday night. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Just one quick final parting shot on this topic, because there's a couple of other things that I really want to let Keith turn loose on, and we've only got Keith for an hour tonight. I told Keith I wanted him to get some rest. It's like one of your star players on your sports team. You got to let him have a little rest, because we're going to lean on him heavy in the playoffs. And when April rolls around, and that's just two shows away, Confederate History Month series. And we're gonna lean on Keith pretty heavy on that, so he's going to be in the studio a little longer than usual. So we're giving him an hour tonight. Coming up in the next hour, Brad Griffin from Occidental Descent. We're going to talk about Chairman Yang and some other topics. And then in the third hour, we're going to have some fun with Mr. TPC. I mean, this guy really is an embodiment of what our audience is all about. He really represents our audience well. Rich Hamblin from the Nashville area is going to be with us, and we're just going to have a little hangout, you know, just guy talk in the third hour. So stay tuned for that. But Keith, we were talking about the fact that in spite of the lavish media attention that has been bestowed upon what happened in New Zealand, 66 out of 67 attacks were committed by Muslims. and we're not the only ones that picked up on that. Eric Kaufman is a professor of politics at Birkbeck University of London. And he specializes in political and religious demography. Anyway, he wrote, despite the horror of the Christchurch mosque attack, there is no upward trend in far-right terrorism in the West in recent years. Now, this is a guy that's just being honest. I don't think he's on our side. Now, we remember Donald Trump was asked last week about whether or not there was a rise in right-wing or white nationalist violence, and he said no. Well, the statistics back that up. The statistics for terrorist attacks this month back it up. This guy, professor of politics at Birkbeck University in London, back it up. But I will say this about Fraser Anning, and I did. Australia is lucky to have a man of courage. America is ruled by cowards and traitors, not one of whom would dare stand up for our founding people. I wish that Fraser Anning was my representative, my senator. Again, people should follow him on Twitter, and you can go to my Twitter and find out how to do that. Now, here's another thing coming up. You know, talking about so-called white nationalist violence. You know, Elizabeth Warren said this week, Keith, that we have to recognize the threat of white nationalism. What threat is that? Apparently, there's none, according to actual cold, hard facts. We've got to call it out, she said. As president of the United States.
It's like a grain of sand in the Sahara Desert, basically, of terrorism in the world. But that's all the left and all of what the deep state wants you to focus on. They want you to focus on a minuscule part of the problem of terrorism. And that's because they have this active animus, this sheer and pure hatred that burns with a gem-like flame against white people and anybody that would advocate on behalf of white people.
Well, she says, as president of the United States, which, of course, thank God that's never going to happen, but my Justice Department would go after white nationalists with full prosecution, which prompted Richard Spencer to reply, now, do these white nationalists have to have committed a crime first, or would you not let questions like that get in the way of your full prosecution? She's saying, you know, her Justice Department is going to go after white nationalists with full prosecution. And then Henrik Palmgren, our good friend over at Red Ice, wrote, if you as much as recognize that white people exist as a group and that we, too, have issues to be concerned about, like drug abuse and below replacement level birth rates, then you are a terrorist like Britton Tarrant. You are a white nationalist or a white supremacist, which, of course, I believe the media uses interchangeably. Now, the hate there is utterly disgusting, because at the end of the day, anybody listening to this show, we're the good guys. We have the moral high ground. We will never apologize. We will never stop fighting for that which we know to be right. And there's some heavy odds out there, and there's some heavy opposition against us. But we stand here strong, and we will continue to stand here strong so long as our audience stands with us. But, Keith, we got to transition here. But if you could, a final parting shot on all that, because I know you want to talk about this issue in Los Angeles.
Well, the only thing is that, let's recall the words of Welsh poet Dylan Thomas, who said, "Do not go gently into that good night." I would recommend that to be the watchwords of every person who is an advocate for white people, who does not, who is white and does not hate himself or herself. We're going to have to stand up. No one else is going to be our champion. You can't leave this for other people to do because it's not getting done. Every person that wants their children and grandchildren to have a future, any future, a future among the living, is going to have to take up the arms and or take up the cudgel, as they say in Ireland at the old days, in this battle. We're going to have to fight for our right merely to exist. And if you miss a canary at the coal mine, it's Zimbabwe and South Africa. Look what happens to white people when they become a minority and you have minorities ruling the roost in a particular country. It's not pretty. You'll be a minority, but you won't be a protected minority. So everybody needs to wake up, smell the coffee, and put their shoulder to the wheel and their nose to the grindstone.
Okay, fantastic commentary as always from Keith Alexander the Great. Let's shift gears here very quickly, Keith, before the next commercial. And that is, I saw this, last week, me and you and Bill Johnson, attorney, prominent corporate attorney in the Los Angeles area, he was on and we spent an hour talking about the college admissions scandal and why it was important from our perspective. Well, I saw an article, big article today in the Los Angeles Times, and it said that the headline was, he didn't have white privilege or wealthy parents, but he got into college the old-fashioned way, through hard work. And it was this profile on this young black teenager in, Compton or, some poor black area of California, and he got into college. So what they're saying is here, the only way whites get into college is if their parents cheat for them, because of privilege. But here's these all-American boys, from the inner city. They're doing it the right way. And I read this, and I'm like, can anybody take this seriously? I mean, Keith, tell them why it's unserious.
It doesn't even have a grain of truth to it because, and I was very disappointed, quite frankly, at Ann Coulter's commentary on this. She said, in effect, that there was a president of Harvard, I believe it was, named James Conan, who held out for a complete meritocracy in admissions, and he thought it had arrived in 1960 when the SAT, the Scholastic Aptitude Test, was adopted by most of the selective colleges and universities in America for as a benchmark for admission. And she said this lasted for 30 years until 1990 when the baby boom's children started getting college age and started applying to college. She missed the mark by about 21 years there. It was actually, if 1960 is when it began, it ended in 1969 when the EEOC under Alfred Bloom Rosen's leadership decided to make affirmative action the official policy of the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, enforcement arm of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. That was the exact year that I graduated from high school. So as a baby boomer, I basically, as soon as I graduated from high school, I was facing affirmative action when I applied to college. I was facing it again 4 years later when I applied to law school. Affirmative action is the 800-pound gorilla on the sofa in the living room. That is the primary engine of inequality and of anti-meritocracy when it comes to admissions to professional schools, selective colleges, and universities. That's what the main, these other things are important, but basically, I think what this whole Richard Singer plan that he worked up, his backdoor, side door admissions and whatnot, and the fact that so many people get into these highly selected colleges and universities by paying their way in, these big nabobs like Jared Kushner's father, Charles Kushner, paid $2.5 million apparently to get him into Harvard. the whole admissions process needs to be governed and scrutinized with the same intensity and even possibly more so than the NCAA applies to the recruitment of college athletes. We need to have complete meritocracy apply, and I would suggest that every college be required to admit one half of its freshman class based on who made the highest grade on the verbal part of the SAT, and the other half based on who made the highest grades in the math part. And that way we won't get it skewed with, math over verbal or verbal over math. We'll get people that will go both into the STEM disciplines and also into the humanities and social sciences. And that's what we need. And, Ann Coulter apparently disregards altogether the fact that affirmative action is the ultimate departure from meritocracy. And in fact, she said something that basically supports it.
Hold on right there, Keith. Hold on. We'll let you have a final word on this because I know there's one more topic you want to get to this hour. So,
do we reflect about our future and where we as a culture are moving? Do we keep our trust in our jobs, homes, money, life necessities, investments, stock markets? Do we believe that our 401ks or other retirements will always be there and that the current economic order will recover? Is the economy going to recover and life return to normal? It ain't gonna happen. By a friend of Medjugorje, whether you are poor, middle class, or rich, it ain't gonna happen. A book of astounding revelations about the present economic order and where we are heading. It Ain't Gonna Happen by a Friend of Medjugorje. To order, visit Medj.com, spelled MEJ.com, or call Caritas in the U.S. 205-672-2000. 205-672-2000.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody ever having a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Hey, listen up. This is a deep state alert. Former Texas Congressman Steve Stockman, who moved to arrest Lois Lerner for contempt of Congress, has been imprisoned by the very office that Lerner led. You heard right. Stockman hit the Obama administration hard, and they hit back with the full force of the federal government. The guy who said he wanted Mark Levin as Speaker of the House was the first to threaten Obama's impeachment, exposed Hillary selling steel to the Iranians, and blocked both Obama's immigration and gun bills from even reaching the House. But Obama holdovers came after him in federal court with trumped-up charges and have locked our guy up. Like many others, he was on Obama's hit list. Steve fought for us in Congress. Now we need to fight for him. Don't abandon this wounded hero on the battlefield. Let's help cover his massive legal costs. To chip in $5 or more, text the word FIGHT to 444-999. That's FIGHT, F-I-G-H-T, to 444-999, or go to defendapatriot.com. That's defendapatriot.com.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, we're going to let Keith have his say on one final topic this hour. But before we get to that last topic, and a busy show still to come, everybody, and a fun show. It got a real laid-back feel tonight. Brad Griffin, another long time friend. Brad's going to be on with us in the second hour, and we're going to be talking about Chairman Yang. We're going to be talking about a couple of things with Brad and Rich Hamblin. Great, relaxed show tonight, the first show of spring. But Keith, just very quickly, going back to this article, the gist of the article was that it was whites that were receiving unfair advantage as a whole, not just these handful of celebrities' children. But as a whole, whites were receiving unfair advantages and not, you know, and the only way for a minority to get in is if he really just overcame all odds and just worked super hard and had to overcome all the obstacles that white privilege had set in front of them. I mean, affirmative action and scholarships is really the most egregious example that probably exists on the planet, and there are many to compete with it.
And Ann Coulter totally misses the point. That's the thing. Her article, Free Felicity Huffman, was one of the few articles she's written that I have to take serious issue with. What this whole college admission scandal shows is that there were more people getting in because they had rich parents or grandparents or whatnot than I had ever imagined before. And it just points out the crying need why, with the twin engines of inequality and unfairness that are being visited upon working class and lower middle class white children who are smart enough to get into these schools, but rarely, if ever, get in because of the twin pinchers movement of affirmative action on one hand and payola, I guess you would call it, on the other hand. We need to have government or some type of independent watchdog agency oversight basically at every admissions office of every highly selective college or university in America, all the way down to, you know, State U, basically, because this type of stuff is going on. I was approached by the people at the Ole Miss Law School about making some type of contribution in order to get my children in there. I laughed at them. I said, are you kidding me to get into Ole Miss Law School? You know, this is not Harvard or Yale. So this type of – apparently all of these colleges and universities are using this as a way to pad their endowments and to get more and more money in, and they're selling off positions. When I can remember when I was a kid, when they passed the 64 Civil Rights Act, they told us that we're now going to have a meritocratic basis for getting people into college. No longer will race be a determination or any other factor other than true merit as measured by tests like the SAT and the ACT.
So, and I think you could say arguably that race is more of a factor today than it's ever been.
Well, race is, you know, basically like that character that they were pointing out in that LA Times article. That guy wouldn't even be in the ballpark to go to a place like Stanford or Harvard or Yale were it not for affirmative action. I can bet you a dollar to a donut hole. On the other hand, people like Jared Kushner, they get thrown into the category of white, but guess what? Jared Kushner probably wouldn't consider himself white. He considers himself Jewish. And isn't it funny how these people, they morph from being Jewish to being white based on the circumstances they find themselves in. Whenever there's any a program to be delivered to them, they're white. Whenever they are, you know, talking among themselves and determining what is really in their interest and what needs to be done in government or in society, there's something else. They're Jews. So this is why we need to have oversight, because these colleges and universities are just, you know, that they play this game that somehow merit is the determining factor. Merit isn't even in the top five categories of what determines who gets into these colleges, universities, and professional schools, James.
All right. That being said, let's go to the final thing we want to cover this hour, and that is a belated happy St. Patrick's Day wish to any of our Irish stock listeners. And, of course, here in the South, we're all Scots-Irish of some variation. It's a big part of who we are. And, of course, our favorite Irishman is certainly Confederate Major General Patrick Claiborne, who I think gave the greatest quote I've ever heard, and that is, if this cause that is so dear to my heart is doomed to fail, I pray heaven may let me fall with it, while my face is towards the enemy and my arm battling for that which I know to be right. Boy, they don't mean like that anymore. We need more men like the great Irish Patrick Claiborne. But anyway, Keith, we had a post up this week on the website about a movie, a Disney movie, when Disney was still Disney, when Disney was still run by the Disney family. And why did we think that it was worthy of a post at thepoliticalcesspool.org?
Well, because it's basically Walt Disney's love letter to the Irish. He had nothing but benevolence in his heart for all the right causes, and he had courage and defiance in his heart for dealing with the forces of unrighteousness that basically dominated every other movie studio in Hollywood during his lifetime up until his death in 1966. But until 1966, there's one thing you depend on besides the fact that the sun would rise in the east and set in the west, and that was that a Disney movie would be wholesome and literate, well-scripted, well-directed, well-produced, and have all the right values. And Darby O'Gill and the Little People, his 1959 love letter to the Irish, is a perfect example. Basically, Irish and Scots-Irish people are Celtic people. Celtic people bring a certain whimsy and a certain intelligence and poetic imagination to the human table that other groups don't have, even other groups of whites. And he saw that, and he basically made Darby O'Gill and the Little People like a primer, like a book about Irish folklore and Irish history. He even portrays people properly. One of the things, for example, at the end of the movie that puzzled me was, why did the Darby's daughter, Katie O'Gill, act so rashly? Well, there's a long history of redheaded Irish women being known for having a bad temper. So that's what he was showing in those last scenes of basically Darby O'Gill and the Little People. And, of course, everything comes together with a very happy ending at the end. But the courtship scenes in particular in that movie, I think, are things that people that think like us need to share with their children. It shows you how you ought to be going about the ritual of courtship. It shows you what it is, and it shows you how a young lady ought to act and how a young man ought to act. These things are not being portrayed properly in any Hollywood movie that I know of now. You know, it's basically just, you know, people rutting like hogs in a trough, and it's just...
Or worse, Keith, than that. I mean, you know, take out all of the gratuitous scenes like that that you're referring to. You know, of course, we talked in a recent broadcast, you, me, and Paul Kersey, about the virulently anti-white films like Black Panther that are now being produced by Disney. You know, so this legendary studio is now just another cog in the Hollywood machine. But of course, it wasn't always the case. We posted, Keith, reposted, I should say, an article about Walt Disney that gives you a little glimpse into some of his traditional political beliefs. A great man, hard to imagine a true American
Jewish
hero.
Hollywood, you know, let's just call it out. Jewish, all the major movie studios now, there are eight of them have Jewish CEOs. Back then, seven did. Everyone except Disney. You had Harry Cohn at Columbia Pictures. You had the Warner Brothers, who were both Jewish, at Warner Brothers, Jack Warner. And then you had MGM, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, Sam Goldwyn and Louis B. Mayer were both Jewish. And they all plotted to take down Disney. They did it, as that article that you posted pointed out, by they unionized his cartoonists and had them go on strike. And they thought that would bring Disney Studios to bankruptcy and they could pick it up for peanuts. And basically, Walt Disney was down to playing his last card, which was the movie Dumbo. If Dumbo had been a failure at the box office, he would have gone bankrupt and they would have taken him over. Instead, it was a great box office smash, and he made enough money to where he could continue on. And after that, basically, he never let a Jewish person, as it says in this article, it's not my conclusion, it's the conclusion of the author of that article that we posted, into a position of power and authority. In fact, it wasn't until 3 years after his death in 1969 that a Jewish actor was ever the featured top-billed actor in a Disney movie, The Love Bug, and the person was Buddy Hackett, who was portrayed as this lovable little fuzzball, but actually was one of the most profane comics ever in the Borscht Belt in the Catskill Mountains, or the Jewish Alps, as they called them in New York City. And but you see, this is what if you read that article, and I would recommend that everybody revisit it. James Fish sat out, and he did a good job to get that on after the Darby O'Gill article. That article shows you just exactly what Disney was dealing with, and he was well aware of who the enemy was and what they were trying to do to him. And he made comments that, quite frankly, would have made John Wayne's comments look like child's play, the ones that he got in trouble for in 1975.
Allegedly. This is based upon the accounting of his critics, but I think there's probably some truth there. Anyway, if you have an affinity for the Irish people, as we do, go to thepoliticalcesspool.org and read the article on Darby O'Gill and the Little People. Give it a watch. It's on YouTube. We'll be back with Brad Griffin.
Watch the movie in its entirety on YouTube.
We'll be right back.